welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Sarah Abu Rashad is a Palestinian immigrant born in Damascus, Syria, where she lived until junior high when the war there forced her and her family from their home. They moved for a year to Abu Dhabi, then traveled to Columbus to live with her uncle. Her early childhood memories of Syria were happy, but she knows she may never return and certainly never will find the familiar places of those memories there again. In Columbus, she mastered the language, the English language, and excelled academically, but still struggled with her differentness, which was heightened when she enrolled at Denison University, where she's one of two students who wear a headscarf. The fine arts of poetry and theater have become part of her outlet. In her one-woman show, A Map of Myself, a 60-minute one-woman revolution on war, immigration, language, home, history, and everything in between, the 19-year-old reveals the identity crisis that gripped her. Sarah Abu Rashad joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Also joining us is the creator of the six-word memoir and director and author of lots of books and also director of A Map of Myself, Larry Smith. Welcome back.
Nice to be here, Ann.
Larry, I just wanted to kick it off with you because I want you to tell us the story of how you knew and when you learned that Sarah had a story you wanted more people to hear.
It's a great Columbus, Ohio story.
Yes.
Almost exactly 3 years ago, I was invited to give a workshop on storytelling with six-word memoirs and other types of things that I do and I love to teach and share with teens at the Thurber House. And about 12 teens showed up. Of course, it was 10 young women and two guys because, unfortunately, self-expression, at least for a little while, seems to be more of a female situation. But we're looking to change that. We want it to be 50-50. And, you know, people shared six-word memoirs and sometimes little backstories. And Sarah was one of the teens. And she made an impression, as anybody who meets Sarah knows. She made an impression. And, you know, that was basically that. I didn't have her email. We didn't really stay in touch. About a year later, I was doing, maybe it was 6 months later, I was doing a backstory show where seven or eight, in this case, all students, would start with six words and tell the backstory in about 8 to 12 minutes at Shadowbox. And I thought, who was that very eloquent young Muslim woman who shared some great six-word memoirs? I think her name was Sarah, and I should ask her to tell a story because I remember her six words left an impression, which were escaped war, war never escaped me. Now, in Columbus, it's not shouldn't be that hard to track down a gifted Muslim teen poet, but it was. It was. I couldn't figure out her last name. Now she's easy to find. I ran into her, of course, at TEDx, and we began talking.
And Sarah, did you think about telling your story in a larger sense before that?
Before that, I've always been writing poetry, and I really got into that when I was in high school. But I remember after doing a few poetry events, it started becoming a larger thing that I wanted to expand on. So instead of performing a brief poem. First, I wrote longer poems that would last 3 to 5 minutes. And then I'd be often asked to do the backstory of it. So even before I met Larry, I had told my story a few times, but never in a more professional way. You know, it was always casual, informal.
You start the play with an internally violent reaction that you have to an experience when you were a student at Centennial High School here in Columbus. What happened that day, and why did you start with that episode?
So the beginning and end of the play were the hardest to write, and I had to rewrite them multiple times. And I finally landed on this violent scene to start with because I've received feedback from others about, you know, being transported immediately into the content of the show, but also because I was myself questioning why is it a story worth telling?
Why did you question that?
Even after I've written the script and I was already in rehearsals, I still had that doubt that, you know, why is it an important story to tell? Why do I want to tell it?
It's personal. You reveal so much about yourself, and that takes a lot of guts to do that, to reveal that you feel that violently towards somebody, mm-hmm. you don't act on it. It's all inside your head, but that you feel that way, it takes a lot of guts to admit that.
Exactly. And that's why it took multiple rewrites for me to arrive at a scene that really shook me to the core, where I, you know, I was threatened for who I was. My headscarf was made fun of. I was told to go back. And that was one of many moments that, to me, really make my story one worth telling. And I think in that aspect, it is not just my story, because I'm sure many young Muslim and non-Muslim women go through that.
What's it like directing somebody through a scene like that where it's so internalized and bringing it out?
Well, one of the real joys of directing Sarah, and also for both of us, 70 minutes, it's her story is told in poetry and prose with some acting, some scene recreation. That's a new for both of us, which has been really, really interesting and frankly, a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
But whenever I work with a storyteller, you want to get to the heart of something. You want to get to emotional truths. And there's a phrase that I know a writing teacher once accused me of when I was younger. She said, Larry, I feel like your story, you're a little bit of an unreliable narrator. You're not giving us the true emotion. Like, expose yourself. But with Sarah, she was always willing to show vulnerability. And that's really not the only thing that makes a good story. But I think it's brave. And I didn't have to push her that hard. She knew that she had to be vulnerable, to expose parts of herself that maybe aren't so pleasant or pretty, her own preconceived notions. And she was willing to do it. And, you know, we worked very, very hard for many months together. And it just was a lot of fun because we're wordy people. Every line counts. We can obsess over a paragraph for hours. And we both just really dig it.
My kind of people. Sarah Abu-Rashad performs a one-woman play. It's titled A Map of Myself, a 60-minute one-woman revolution on war, immigration, language, home, history, and everything in between at the Columbus Museum of Art, Saturday, November 10th. Go to the link on our website for more information. I saw it yesterday. It was fantastic. Highly recommend it. Again, go to the link on our website for more information about that. Sarah also wrote it, by the way. And also with us today, Larry Smith is creator of the six-word memoir, an old friend of the show, and also director of A Map of Myself. Language plays a big role in your story, Sarah. You've only been in the U.S. for 4 years. It's always shocking when I hear that. And you've mastered the English language. Even to hear you and see what goes through your eyes or what appears to be going through your mind when you're talking about language in the show, just it reveals so much nuance in your understanding of the language. What motivated you, though, to master it the way you have?
I truly believe that language is intuition. And for me, it wasn't so much a task as it was a way of expression. Basically, I just taught myself another art, another form of expression that I could use. And being a poet in Arabic, I loved language for as long as I remember. And when I was just 7 or 8, I told my mom I wanted to learn French really fluently. So she had a private tutor who would come and teach me French at my
home.
This
is when you lived in Syria.
Yes, when I lived in. So I've always been curious about language, and my mom just agreed, and she said yes, you know. So even when I came here, I knew that language was not going to be difficult for me because I really wanted to learn it. And unlike many other immigrants, I think our mentality about language really shapes the way we learn it. If you think of it as a must, as a task, then it's hard, you know, and you may never learn it fully or as well as you want to. But for me, I just craved it, and it was easy.
But you don't want to stop dreaming in Arabic.
True. This is an interesting aspect where, you know, you lay your head down and suddenly all these languages you speak come together. And I've had dreams in French and English and Arabic, and often they're mixed together. And it's funny seeing people I know here in America in a Syrian setting in my mind I don't know what happens. Just internally, I start to, you know, play with places because I've struggled with them for so long. So I don't want to stop dreaming in Arabic because it's a beautiful language and I love it. And my grandmother was my first teacher of poetry. And even now I write these poems in English and I still sit next to her and she asks me to translate what I've written.
And Larry, as far as talking about how you and Sarah talked about how much to incorporate Arabic into the story.
I think we kept adding more and more Arabic
as
I began to fall in love with the language.
Right.
And it's a beautiful language. It's not that I didn't know that. It's just that I didn't really know that.
Well, you don't really hear it. You certainly don't hear it spoken artistically.
You don't hear it spoken
in
artistically.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. We did, you know, we learned how to do a theater production together. And I've learned to trust the process. So we did what's called a table read, where 12 people sit around your living room and you order Donatos and you have pizza and wine if you drink. And you get a feedback. And Sarah just reads the thing. She doesn't really act it. And she has one of the poems she recites is in Arabic. And my thought was to translate it on a screen behind us. And everyone said, no. We don't care what it says. We can feel it. And so she actually, I don't want to give away what she does at the end, but it's pretty sweet. And I want to say something else, which is, you know, to read that subtitle of the show that you read, which Sarah wrote, that title and the subtitle, it sounds pretty intense. And it is. It's quite an hour. But it's also people keep saying to me, wow, it's really funny. There's a lot of humor. And if I think back at a lot of the jokes or the things that are funny, it's all around language or mostly around language. I don't want to give it away. But so don't worry, listeners. It's also quite fun.
No, and I actually mentioned that off air when we were first talking that there was a lot of funny moments in it. But I think that's the texture of life. And if you don't have that, you know, the emotional ups and downs mm-hmm. in something like that, then it's going to come across. But it was felt very authentic mm-hmm. and very naturally funny. I loved hearing about the old Syria, the one before the war. Mm-hmm. We don't hear about that very often. Tell us about your life there as a child and what you left behind. I think it's important for people to know that you actually left Syria before it got really, 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 really bad.
That is true.
Were lucky in that way.
Yes.
But it's not that way anymore. So what was it like when you were a kid?
Syria is a very lovely place, and it's very hard for me to describe it because I never had to think about it. But I want to mention this. Maybe a year ago when we first were talking about the idea of the show, I met with David Brown of Harmony Project, and he knew that I was thinking about this, and he said one thing. He said, Sarah, I hope you describe Syria because I'm really curious about that. And this really stayed with me because people don't know about places before they're known for negative things. You know, we only heard about Syria because of the war, mm-hmm. but otherwise no one knew anything. But Syria has a very rich history. Damascus is the oldest inhabited city in the world. It's such an ancient civilization that walking in our downtown, you know, you see these ancient buildings and mosques from the Ottoman Empire, from times of our prophet, from very, very old times, and it really enriches your spirit. It's very spiritual. There are a lot of churches, a lot of mosques. There are Jewish temples, and it's just exciting to walk around and see people busy and see them walking. I say it's a lot like New York because when I visited New York City, it reminded me so much of it.
The hustle and the bustle.
Exactly. In all aspects, you know, how fast everything's going, how connected, how close. You know, we have tiny alleys and cars just drive through that. And there's also, you know, trash on the street. And so it just resembled Syria in all aspects. It felt very homey and I never expected that resemblance. That's the other thing.
Another part of the play that I really enjoy and I think people really take away from it is you learn, yes, you learn a lot about Syria and you learn about Ramadan.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
maybe a lot of us are like, I don't know, feel silly saying, well, tell me about Ramadan because we should know, right? But maybe we don't. And so I love that I have a safe spot with working with Sarah where I can ask really dumb questions, you know, because, you know, we trust each other.
Uh-huh.
And to hear Sarah describe Ramadan is just, it is so lovely. And you understand about the fasting in a different way. And
yes.
so sneakily, you get a lot of lessons in history about
yep.
maybe something you don't know that well. Under the auspice of a terrific performance.
Yeah, so all the kids out there who want to stay up all night, you should go to Ramadan. You're absolutely right, Larry, and thank you for that. That's Larry Smith, creator of the Six Word Memoir and director of A Map of Myself. Also with us, Sarah Abu Rashad. She's an actor and writer of A Map of Myself. And that subtitle, A 60-Minute One-Woman Revolution on War, Immigration, Language, Home, History, and Everything in Between. It's at the Columbus Museum of Art, Saturday, November 10th. Check it out. You can go to the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides for more information. We're going to continue our conversation, so stay with us. If you'd like to join our conversation, are you an immigrant and want to express yourself about what your experience has been in Columbus, Ohio, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the immigrant experience as expressed through the art of poetry and theater today. Still with us is Denison University student Sarah Abu Rashad. Her one-woman show is titled A Map of Myself, a 60-minute one-woman revolution on war, immigration, language, home, history, and everything in between. Also with us is the creator of the six-word memoir and director of A Map of Myself, Larry Smith. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Sarah, in your play, you talk about the significance of dropping a fork in the cafeteria at Denison University. And that was it was funny. I mean, you made fun, but it was also really significant that we forget, you know. So tell us about that. I don't want to take too much from your show. I'm trying to avoid, but it just really spoke to me.
Mm-hmm. So, with the headscarf comes two things. First, how invisible you feel, but at the same time, how hyper-visible you are.
Invisible in that everyone's looking at the scarf and not you.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, my claim has been that when you wear a headscarf, people don't really look at your face. They don't even know how you look like. That's why you see, you know, many girls with headscarves and someone just casually comments, oh, you all look alike, right? So that has happened to me many times. And there were instances where people would mistake my mom for me and they'd say, oh, good job on this poem or something. And we would just laugh, you know, it's funny. But being in a place where there aren't many people like me, it was just really interesting for me to become more self-conscious of who I am and how people perceived me. I never had to think about that until I was put in an environment where I really stand out. So something as insignificant as dropping a fork really brings attention to who I am. And people just turn and they look at you and you feel like they judge you. So that was important for me to include because this is my perception, you know, this is my truth of it. And whether or not they think, oh, she's that Muslim girl or she's just Sarah. Or you know.
All Muslim mm-hmm. people drop forks in a cafeteria.
Exactly, right. That's the generalization that comes with it.
That sense of representation.
There was we did a talk back after the last performance, and we'll do another one on this coming performance. And the last question, a young woman in the back row, she said, you know, I'm a Muslim woman, and sometimes I wear the headscarf and sometimes I don't. And she said something that, I mean, it echoes some of the themes in A Map of Myself, but it really hit home. It was a great way to end our talk back. She said, more people talk to me when I don't wear the headscarf. You know, when I wear it, I am in both very visible, as Sarah said, and also invisible. And just to have that experience of you take off one piece of clothing and how people see you changes so dramatically.
That reminded me of when I talked to a police officer one time who said when they're not in their cruiser, you know, the police cruiser, when they're just normal, they see people speeding all over the place. But when they're and that's what it kind of reminded me of. Did it resonate with you because you always wear a headscarf? It's part of your identity now. So,
yeah, and it was an interesting question because she had the experience of both.
Yeah,
I really can't say I did because I've started wearing the headscarf. You know, it's been a long time now. It's been a few years, and in Syria, you know, it's a rite of passage. Everyone eventually wears a headscarf. So it's no big deal whatsoever. And even friends who don't wear it, you never comment on it. But yeah, it was interesting when she asked me that she felt very different. I almost didn't have an answer because I can't tell,
you
know, what
that,
it would feel like not to wear it anymore. But I am aware of the way people perceive it differently. And I hope that young girls like that really learn to take pride in who they are and the parts of themselves they want to show.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Sarah Aboud-Rachet. She is the author. She wrote and performs A Map of Myself. It will be there's one more show at the Columbus Museum of Art on Saturday, November 10th. Check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment, want to talk about the immigrant experience by way of art, how you express it, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Ahmed in Hilliard, you're on the air. Hi, Ahmed.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good, good. Hey, one sec.
There we go. All right.
Okay.
So I am a second-generation Somali-American who's also a fourth-year student at Ohio State. So going into the community and having conversations about identity, and immigration, and then also in school in the community having conversations with immigration, you'll find in certain immigrant communities there's a sense of alienation and not feeling that they're a part of the community, that they don't belong. With that comes not being engaged or feeling like, well, why should I, you know, take part in the system that doesn't want me here? And on the other side, obviously, we have people who believe that, you know, immigrants shouldn't be here, or, you know, with the current rhetoric with the guy in the Oval Office. So you'll find this sense of cynicism or sense of not wanting, you know, people here on both sides. So I kind of wanted to add that to the conversation where a lot of immigrants, you know, just don't for a lot of reasons don't want to be engaged or don't feel like they're at home and they should be engaged, though. So. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Ahmed. Yeah, that question of home, that word I in my notebook wrote down home, because that's another thing. I mean, where's your home? What do you call home? And what does that mean?
I think I've learned to not associate home with a place. Because of my many displacements, home has become a feeling of being comfortable where you are, of being confident, of being welcomed. And I want to comment on what Ahmed just said. Yes, there are always people who may not want you, but the truth is you're here anyway, right? So you might as well make it home for you. You might as well be engaged, prove yourself, because these people don't really affect your life in any way. And whatever they say, that does not change the fact that you're here, that you're working, that you're studying, that you're growing. So it's really about us and the contribution we want to have in the community, not really about how people see us.
And here's the thing about choosing to engage or share your story or not. And you know, my whole work is around helping people tell their story in 6 words and often in more words, which is this. When you tell a story, a hard one especially, something can happen to you. You release something. And when you release something, someone or many people can catch that story. And that can change their mind or change their world or just make them think a little differently. And the professor at Denison, Michael Morris, they said something under a whole different topic at a big table conversation a few months ago about having – going forward and being sort of an activist or about like having to explain yourself to people. And something that they said was this. You don't have to share your story. You really don't. But if you do, there's a chance you'll change the world. And Sarah, while a natural storyteller, I've said one of the most gifted storytellers I've ever met, and she's speaking in her second language, knows that because she has this ability, this gift, she has an obligation to share that story.
It's interesting, though. I wonder if the obligation, because someone asked you what your plans for the future were, and I would have thought brilliant playwright, brilliant poet, something in the arts, and then you said politics.
I did.
But a good politician has to have a good story, too, in my opinion. But
In a lot of people's minds, arts and politics don't really mix well. But I think they do. And I think they influence one another extremely, you know, in the way that politics influence the arts we're making at the time, and our arts also reflect our politics. So I don't think of my show as explicitly political, but as definitely a political form of art. Hmm. And to me, I think while it's amazing to keep creating art, it's really helpful and even, you know, more needed, much needed, to just change the system on more than one level. I'm really happy with the way arts are transforming communities, but I would also like to see more change happen in different places. And I think the same obligation I feel to keep using my voice and the weight of representation I carry is also an obligation of representation in different communities. And one of them is the political atmosphere, because there aren't women like me, you know, on or even in the media, on TV, mm-hmm. or in the Senate, in the House. I mean, just 2 days ago, we welcomed our first 2 Muslim congresswomen, and that was a big milestone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there was a little bit of a Run, Sarah, Run vibe at Columbus Museum of Art the other day. But, you know, like on The Daily Show, there was that joke that like, oh, our senior black correspondent, right? They're making fun of that thing. And, you know, Sarah wants to be perhaps a politician, not a Muslim American politician, just a politician. Mm-hmm. And I would joke to people, you don't want to miss this performance, because won't you feel silly when in 10 or 15 years when she's America's poet laureate? But maybe you'll feel silly when she's America's when she's a senator.
Carry around a backpack in the play.
I do.
And I wanted you to talk about that, because it held your props. I guess mm-hmm. you could just talk about, you know, sometimes you're sitting on the bench, sometimes you're on the floor, sometimes you're standing, sometimes you're digging through the backpack for something. You could have had all the props laid out, but some of the things are in the backpack mm-hmm. and some are not. Talk about the juxtaposition of all of that.
So our set is very interesting because it's very simple. And you really have to be there and pay attention to know how the places are transforming based on what part of the story is happening where on stage. And funny thing, we originally had 3 physical desks or chairs to represent 3 places.
Okay.
But just a week before our first show, we had an experiment audience, and they said, well, you don't sit nearly enough for the chair to stay in that place, you know. And
okay.
And with sets comes the fact that they're going to be there the entire time. Whether you use them or not, they are a distraction to the audience. So that's when the idea came to replace the chairs with just me physically sitting in these spots and instead carrying the book bag around, because that tracks my entire journey. You know, my entire life, I've carried suitcases and book bags and books and notebooks and toys. So that was just a very intimate part. And I was really glad I could share it and just have it physically travel with me.
Yeah.
Well, one of my storytelling heroes is the late Spalding Gray, who I think really was the reason for the explosion of one-person shows. And he always sat at a desk. So I was like, it's a tribute to him, but like nobody cares or knows. And as we kept paring down the set, and I do love to get things down to their essence, mm-hmm. we realized the set is Sarah and what she carries and a little bit of lights and things. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the reasons that just today I received 2 texts and 3 emails from different people who saw the show and said, oh, my God, I related so much. And one was a yoga teacher, and one runs a choir, and one was someone who runs a theater company. And it feels universal. It really does, yeah. In part because we've all been to school. We've all had our valuables in our backpack as a teenager. And that backpack is such a universal symbol, and the way Sarah works with that backpack and the fact that the set comes out and sort of surprises from that backpack, the props at least, I think it's a touchstone for relatability in the show.
And it's a very vivid backpack, which you'll see when you go. I asked you to recite something from your show, and you said you would. And just to go out on this last segment, I thought, tell us what you're going to talk about, what you're going to say. And I think, what did we talk about?
So there are 2 parts I'd be interested in sharing. I think those really highlight the show and its themes. One is the section I call What's the Weight of Your Life? And that's an interesting title Larry and I came up with. We actually had an indirect question to each section. And in some parts, it was shared publicly. In some parts, you know, only we knew what the question was. So, I'd be happy.
Could you do one of those sections right now? Maybe the other one later. Yeah.
Yes. All right. So here is What's the Weight of Your Life? What is the weight of your life? All of it. Your beauty, your disorders, your depression, your losses, your wins, your worries, your hopes, your dreams. What is the weight of what you believe in? What is the weight of your cross necklace? What's the weight of the headscarf you wear or do not wear? How heavy is a tattoo? How light are the lies you've told? Everything. Single thing you've ever done, every soccer practice, every pet you had, every dollar you spent, every graduation, your proud family cheering you on. But wait, is your life any lighter if you're fatherless, motherless, homeless? Or does that make you heavier? What about the moment the doctor said you had cancer? Or you couldn't have any children. What is the weight of that? Can you measure it? What unit would that be? Pounds? Stones? Kilograms? Mountains?
That's Sarah Abou-Rachet. She is performing a bit from her show, a one-woman show. It's titled A Map of Myself, a 60-minute one-woman revolution on war, immigration, language, home, history, and everything in between. It's at the Columbus Museum of Art on Saturday. Check it out. We have a link on our website at WOSU.org if you want to go to that link. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@WOSU.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7. NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the immigrant experience as expressed through the art of poetry and theater. Still with us, Denison University student Sara Abu Rachet. Her one-woman show is titled A Map of Myself, a 60-minute one-woman revolution on war, immigration, language, home, history, and everything in between. Also with us, creator of the six-word memoir and director of A Map of Myself, Larry Smith. Cleveland Public Theater uses its space to explore and promote the stories of immigration and refugees, offering some plays in Spanish language and working to create a more inclusive space. Raymond Bobgon is the artistic director for the Cleveland Public Theater, and we invited him to join us. Welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
When did the importance of providing this venue for that emerge, Raymond?
Well, really, we just started looking at the incredible, rich diversity of Cleveland about 12 years ago, and realized that most of the actors in the community were African-American and white, and we really wanted our theater to be a place where our community can come together. And so we started working to do free workshops, first in the Latino community, and Teatro Público de Cleveland was founded. We're 6 years later now, and the company has grown, done multiple productions, and grown from really an amateur company to a very professional group that is doing plays in Spanish and some in English. And now we're working also with the Arabic-speaking community.
There's a market for this, then.
Yeah, I think one of the cool things is that with this Latino group we started, Teatro Público de Cleveland, now there's another Latino group in town that's formed, and it just, we demonstrated there's a market for it, both from people want to hear their own language spoken on stage and hear their own stories, but people also want to learn about their community and other people. So this audience is incredibly mixed. There's a market for it, and there's a need for our community for us to have this kind of dialogue and for us to be exposed to people who are like us and people who are not like us.
In terms of attracting audience, Sara and Larry Smith, of course, did you feel like a risk?
Definitely. Honestly, we were really scared for our bigger performance that was the Lincoln Theater. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seats 500 to 600 people. And, you know, how on earth do you fill that up? You know, with a one-woman show, a 19-year-old, the first-time actress. And for me, it was really important, and that's when our collaboration was strongest and how we attracted our different, you know, communities. Larry pulled all, you know, all his cards, and he brought everyone.
Larry.
Yeah. I don't much let up.
And it was just extremely important for us to fill that up and to really get the most amount of people to hear it.
Yeah. I think something that Raymond is obviously doing so well is that when we would say to people, please come see the show, we think you'll like it, but bring somebody who wouldn't necessarily like think to come to the show or be in our social media feeds. Like, bring somebody else, you know, not necessarily to change their mind, but maybe to open it a little bit. Uh-huh. And one thing that really happened at all these productions is groups of middle school and high school people came. You could do anything you want on a Saturday night, I guess, if you're, you know, 15. And 15 friends came to the show at the Lincoln, and kids from all different schools have been coming. We're doing some school shows. But, you know, you want to get these hearts and minds a little young, expose them to things they've not been exposed to.
Raymond, what have you learned about anything in doing this? I don't want to even define what the realm is.
Right. I mean, it's a constant learning experience. I mean, for us, there's also a real hunger for the artists who work at CPT. So this didn't come out of like purely like, oh, we need to do good, but really out of an artistic drive to hear stories and to work with people who are going to have stories and songs and dances totally different than what we have, and to bring those things together. You know, the thing that I think just keeps resonating for me, right now I'm in rehearsals with their newest project, Masra Cleveland Al Arabi, which is a group that is forming from different communities, from people who speak Arabic. And it's on the one hand, these extremely hyper-specific traditions or ways of talking or phrases or poetry or stories that are so specific just to this small culture that otherwise no one would hear. And then the next moment, you hear something that is like so universal. And so the connections, these funny connections that come up between this Arabic group, Arabic speaking group, and the Latino group, for example, in Puerto Rico, it's common that a lot of mothers will slip off their flip flop and throw it at a child as a little warning of, hey, watch out what you're doing. And this group from Lebanon was like, oh, our mothers take off their slipper and throw it at us. So it's like the same thing, this cross-cultural thing. So we're all the same inside in so many ways, and yet at the same time, we have these beautiful, different expressions of humanity.
Yeah.
If Raymond could see me, he would see me nodding at this comment, because I cannot tell you how universal it is.
And
truly, you know, it sums up our life. Everything is universal. And the rule with art is that the more specific, the more universal it is. So when you bring up things from, you know, the way your grandmother makes soup, suddenly everyone's grandma makes it the same way. You know? So it's really interesting in that sense.
Sarah's grandmother, who's a vital part of the show and lives here in Columbus with her mom, she doesn't speak a word of English. And yet, when I see her at some of these receptions after the shows, I'm like, oh, you want me to eat? Just like my Jewish grandma. You know, grandma's all over.
You know, one of the things that I loved about the show, Sarah, is when you spoke in Arabic. And you some poetry. I think you were citing poetry, and I didn't know what you were saying, but it was another window into your soul to hear you speaking another language in a way, and your first language. You looked different.
I did, and you know, this show is so authentic because it represents me, all of me, and you know, I'm proficient in English, but I also carry that language with me, Arabic. And so for me, it was extremely important that that finds its way in the script. And, you know, it was a very wise decision to include it. And Larry supported it wholeheartedly.
If you noticed that, Raymond, just from observing the theater groups that are doing this and are doing in, like, say, the Spanish, in Spanish, do you see them? Yeah. Did they look differently to you?
I think they look differently. You know, we all change as we walk through the world. We all have different kinds of code switching we do. Mm-hmm. And that can be quite transformative. I think one of the really beautiful things for me, we were working with some kids who were performing from many different countries, and I looked in the front row, and there was a man in our community, a prominent lawyer, and he was just weeping. And it wasn't like a sad part in the performance. And I went in afterwards. I said, you were very touched. He said, I can't tell you what it means to hear my language spoken on stage by a child. And I think so the transformation is not just in that person on stage, but in the audience. And, you know, the other incredible piece and why I really am so grateful, Sarah and Larry, for your work is just that continual effort to reach people to say, we are all people. We have a lot of ways to express our religions, and that's what America is all about. But we also all need to feel safe. And together, we're stronger. And that is the thing that just keeps coming through to me as we do this work here, is as a community, we are stronger when we can come together.
And you know, the data proves it. I mean, we know that socially and mentally and expression-wise, we're better as a diversified America and world, but actually it's great for the economy, you know? It's great for the economy. And it's great to
too many cooks don't spoil the broth. They just have lots of different kinds of broth.
And it's great to walk around Columbus and eat so many different kinds of food. And you have not lived until you've been to Lavash with Sarah and her mother. Man, the food comes out.
But it's interesting because it's not necessarily the case in Cleveland, but in Columbus, 30 years ago when I moved here, it was just a vast white bread wasteland. And now it's so enriched by the immigrant communities that have moved here. And of course, you know, people's taste in food improved along the way. But your community in Cleveland is deeper rooted, Raymond, so this has to be kind of a huge change for them to have this venue now.
Well, I think, you know, it's going to be a growing process.
Yeah.
But I think it's also a change for the larger community. We are a community across America of immigrants. We came here. We are not on land that was ours, and we're so grateful to be on other on the land that we are, and that was not our heritage. And it's easy to forget that we're all immigrants, and to think that that other people's immigrant stories are so different. And so I think the real change is not just in, say, the Latino community or these different communities that speak Arabic, but the real change is in the entire community.
Yeah, Sarah?
I definitely second that. And I think it's very important to diversify the arts so that they reflect our current communities and they speak to our, you know, young people who are the leaders of the future and who want to see people who look like them in all walks of life.
I mean, we want to see 1,000 Sarah Abou-Rasheds bloom and 1,000 different performers, which you're already doing, Raymond, in your theater company. And that's the idea. It doesn't stop here. It just gets bigger and more diverse.
So, you know, Sarah, what's next?
What's next? We really don't know. I mean, the horizon is wide open and we're dreaming big. The hope is that we take this to as many schools and universities and stages as we can.
And because it's easy to forget that Sarah's a sophomore at Denison, which has been so so supportive
right.
of this play in many different ways, and we're grateful for that. But what's next is also she has finals coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes I forget, I'm like, what's going on? She's like, oh, I got a midterm tomorrow. And it's easy to forget that she has a full course load. But we hope that A Map of Myself goes far. And we hope that it's the beginning to help many others have the courage to share their story, whether on stages or in classrooms or around the dinner table.
And Raymond Babagan, what's next at Cleveland Public Theater?
Well, on November 30th, we will be doing the premiere work of Masra Cleveland Al-Arabi. It's called Halam Watan, and I Dream of Home. And we're really, really just thrilled to be hosting this company and see what they're going to bring.
Well, we'll have a link to the website for Cleveland Public Theater for folks who want to learn more about that and check that out. We'll also have a link at WOSU.org/allsides if you want to learn more about Sarah Abou-Rasheds' A Map of Myself. She's performing it at the Columbus Museum of Art on Saturday, November 10th. Raymond Babagan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, and thank you so much for the work you're doing.
Raymond Babagan is the Executive Artistic Director of the Cleveland Public Theater. Also, Larry Smith, creator of the six-word memoir and director of A Map of Myself, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Anne.
And Sarah Abou-Rasheds, thanks to you as well. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Sarah Abou-Rasheds performs A Map of Myself, a 60-minute one-woman revolution on war, immigration, language, home, history, and everything in between. You can learn more about the next performance on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Want to say thanks as well to the All Sides staff, producer Mary Lee Williams, assistant producer Kyle McKinnon, our All Sides interns, Martin Coleman, Kaylin Martin, Maisie Glockner, and Ray Brewster, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DiCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Like All Sides on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter at WOSU All Sides, and you can follow me too at Ann Fisher, WOSU. Thanks for your attention today and have a great one. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.